Hello, Catskills. Welcome to the Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour.
I'm Lissa Harris, and I'm the Watershed Post editor.
I'm Julia Reichel, and I'm the publisher of the Watershed Post.
We are a news hub, an embracing antidote to the idea that nothing ever happens around here.
Here's what we've got for you today.
We have a special guest later in the program. His name is David Mertzig, and he's a municipal lawyer for several upstate towns who's been working on local bans on gas drilling. So we'll be talking with him later in the show.
Speaking of fracking, last week, the New York Department of Environmental Conservation riled opponents of hydraulic fracturing by issuing draft laws that will allow drilling across the state if they are enacted.
The village of Margaretville faces some expensive options for rebuilding a block on Main Street that was damaged by flooding.
A Catskill man was killed on Monday while trying to cross a ramp at a rest area on Route 23 in Catskill.
And feral pigs are once again menacing the Catskills and other places in New York State as well.
Terrifying. Let's start with Margaretville. Lissa, those businesses on Main Street, you talked with Peg Ellsworth this morning about it?
I did a little bit, although I'm still working on that story, but the Margaretville last week heard from Lamont Engineering about the status of those buildings. It's a block known colloquially as the Cheese Barrel Block, whose fate has been up in the air since the floods, when it got some heavy damage. And there was talk that it was going to be condemned for a while.
It's not going to be condemned.
It's not clear. And Margaretville has some decisions to make, and the business owners have some decisions to make. Basically, Lamont says there are three options, and none of them are terribly cheap. One would be to stabilize the existing block and restore it on a single new foundation, and they estimate that that would cost somewhere around $840,000.
Who would pay for that?
It's unclear, because it's unclear what will be decided. Some of it will surely be up to the building owners themselves, but I'm sure there are all sorts of options on the table. Another option is to stabilize some of the buildings, but to take down the two in the center that were the most badly damaged. That would be the buildings with the Village Pub and Rocco's at the bottom of them. And that would be more in the neighborhood of $750,000. And the third option is to demolish the entire block. This is what many people in the village were trying to avoid, to demolish that and replace the Binnakill wall that's along the stream there, and that would be $275,000. And then a cost to rebuild similar buildings on the site would be upwards of $2 million.
That is not a bunch of good options.
It's not a lot of good options. And so there are some really tough decisions that are going to have to be made, and we are going to follow that story. We're working on doing some reporting on that issue as we speak, and there's lots of talk in the village about what ought to be done and if those buildings do get renovated, how it ought to be done.
So stay tuned, Lissa. Lissa's hot on the trail of the bad choices facing Margaretville Main Street. A man was killed in Catskill on Monday. 52-year-old Catskill resident Harry Carr was struck by a car and killed around 7:30 p.m. on October 3rd near a rest area off Route 20. In the town of Catskill. Carr was attempting to cross the entrance ramp from the rest area, and as he crossed the ramp, he was struck by a Pontiac sedan operated by Joshua Delamonica, a 29-year-old. Carr died at the scene of his injuries.
Feral pigs are gaining a foothold in western Sullivan County and in other places across New York State. If you've been a longtime Watershed Post reader, you will probably recognize this story.
We can't stop talking about them. They're terrifying.
They're still here. Private citizens are taking matters into their own hands to stop them, partly because the state doesn't have too much money to be doing things like eradication programs right now.
So a feral pig is what?
A feral pig is usually a hybrid of a domestic pig and a Russian boar.
Where do the Russian boars come from?
They are actually bred in the area.
Oh.
And this is perhaps not a good idea. There are private hunting ranges that are breeding feral pigs so that hunters can come up and go to the private range and pay a few hundred dollars to shoot a pig.
So these pigs aren't pigs just making their way up the eastern seaboard on their own. These are pigs escaping.
They are
from
escaping.
Local
they are escaping from local breeders, and they are possibly breeding in the wild. And in other places, this has happened in some of the more southerly states, and in places like Michigan,
Texas.
And
yeah,
Texas. They're a terrible problem in Texas. There are lots of states where they're a problem, and you can actually go online, I believe it's the USDA, has a map where you can see the spread of invasive feral pigs across the nation. And they've been a problem in many places. And in many of these places, it's not just that they've kind of gotten out without any help from people. It's that people have been breeding them, and then they have escaped from their from these hunting sanctuaries.
So what are private citizens doing about that?
Well, there is a farmer near the western edge of Sullivan County, Peter Anderson, whose fields have been overrun by these wild pigs and who has seen tens of thousands of dollars of crop damage because of them. And the Times Herald Record interviewed him and had a story last week in which he describes killing 8 of them in one night, 8 with 9 shots fired, which
that's a really good
He's a really crack shot, this guy.
And they have very thick skulls, right? How do you even kill them?
They do. This is actually the same guy that we quoted maybe a month or two ago, talking about how you shoot at them and their heads are oriented in this way that if you don't shoot them exactly right, the bullet just glances right off their skull. And
we clearly need to have this guy in as a guest.
I know, we do. Anyway, they actually identified... The Times Herald Record story identified one of the private hunting preserves in Bethel that is part of the problem and got the owner to admit that, yes, his pigs are getting out. So check out that story.
One last detail. These feral pigs carry pseudorabies, which is a disease that doesn't infect humans, but it is herpes-like and can infect other animals like
yes.
cows and cats and dogs.
It's
correct?
Actually it's related to herpes and not to rabies, although it is called pseudorabies.
Oh, that's really helpful.
I know, yeah. Isn't that great? Pig
okay.
herpes. No, but yeah, people do not get it, but it does cause devastating fatalities on domestic pig farms. It can also infect wildlife as well as cows, dogs, cats, and other animals.
Thank you, Lissa. Keep us posted about the feral pigs, please.
Oh, I will. Oh, we'll hear more about them later in the show. I have a poem about them coming up.
That's terrifying.
Isn't it?
Disaster aid has been declared for Ulster County in the wake of Tropical Storm Lee. This is in addition to disaster aid that has already been made available to Ulster County for the aftermath of Hurricane/Tropical Storm Irene. But yesterday, Governor Andrew Cuomo and federal officials declared that Ulster County residents can also ask for aid for flooding that occurred in the first week of September, which was when Lee hit, or the remnants of Lee hit the area. This is great news, but it also means more paperwork and confusion. The director of Ulster County Emergency Services, Art Snyder, sent out an email right after this announcement was made yesterday, telling people who have already applied for FEMA aid in Ulster County that they will have to apply again for Lee aid, which is double the paperwork.
So if you think you've done all your paperwork, do it again. What's the worst thing that could happen? You spend a few hours doing extra paperwork. Well, I have a horror of that, too. But anyway, the New York City DEP has put up $1 million for business recovery from the floods in the New York City watershed. This is going to be added to an already existing $5 million pot of money put up by the Catskill Watershed Corporation to help businesses in the watershed rebuild. So that's some good news. $6 million is still not going to be close to the actual amount of damage, but it's a start.
But isn't that money, the $1 million, going into something called the Fund for the Future,
yes.
which is not determined where the future will be spent yet?
Well, no, they're drafting lists of businesses that have been damaged in every town in the New York City watershed that got significant flood damage, and the supervisors and the town boards are going around identifying those businesses and presenting the CWC with a list of them.
Okay.
And the grants are going to be for rebuilding, so they're not for loss of inventory or loss of income. So obviously, it's not going to cover all of the economic damage, but the idea is to get those businesses that have had their buildings damaged, to get those buildings open again and get the businesses back on their feet.
Okay, so there is a plan. I misread that.
Oh, no, there is a plan.
Okay, good.
There is a plan. Unfortunately, some of the flooding damage happened outside the New York City watershed.
Of course.
So if your business is not inside that line, which usually people are more happy to be outside the line than inside the line, But if your business is not inside that line, you're not eligible for the grant.
Well, we'll be following that as well.
We will be.
As I mentioned earlier, the New York State DEC has released draft laws that would regulate the ability of people and companies to start drilling for natural gas. Sorry, why is it so hard to say? Natural gas drilling is coming.
It's not like we've been writing about this for
Yeah, I know, seriously.
Years now.
So what the DEC did last week, it was last Wednesday that they did this, is they released draft laws.
Again, these are really, really the final draft.
No, you're confused. You're confusing the environmental impact statement, which is not a law, with draft regulations, which is what they released last week. No, it's very important, this distinction. In fact, this is the laws are the first time anyone's seen exactly what the legal code would look like under a regime that allows fracking. And they are due to go into effect if nobody stops
Well, there
them.
Will be a public comment period.
Right. I'm jumping ahead of myself.
As there always is with these things.
There are now two simultaneous public comment periods. One's for these draft regulations and one for the environmental impact statement. And they both end in December, on December 12th. And there will be a separate set of public hearings about the new laws, not the impact
statement. But now people are upset about this, not just because they have issued draft regulations, but for other reasons as well, right?
Two reasons. One, because they think you shouldn't actually draft the new laws until you've gotten the impact statement out of the way. But they're running simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And opponents of drilling, for the most part, say, oh, you're just doing an end run around the public comment period about the environmental impact. You don't care. You just want to steamroll, get drilling in as fast as possible.
And what's the other criticism?
The other criticism is that there are eight public hearings set across the region for
In four locations,
and none of them are in Delaware, Otsego, or Shenango counties, which these are counties that will see gas drilling.
Although there will be one in Sullivan County.
Yes, and in Livingston County and in Broome County, and there will be one in Manhattan.
If you look at the map, they are stretched across the state.
Yes, very far across the state.
But there still involves a lot of driving for some people who may well see gas drilling in their towns to get to one of these hearings.
Right. So there's hue and cry about these developments, as there is about every development in the very glacial march towards what seems like inevitable hydraulic fracturing in New York State.
Well, we'll hear more about that, too, because our guest today is a lawyer who's been working on local town bans on gas drilling, and or specifically on heavy industry, which includes gas drilling. So we'll be talking to him later.
We have one more story.
Moving right along.
New York City tap water.
Mm-hmm. New York City tap water, which a lot of people up here have been skeptical of whether people ought to be drinking it, is clean despite the massive flooding, at least on the tap end. We talked to the DEP recently, whose spokesman Farrell Skleroff told us that the city's reservoirs were full of stirred up sediment after the flooding, but that by doing extra chlorination and by using a substance called alum to settle sediment to the bottom of the Kensico Reservoir, the agency was able to keep the water clean enough to drink on the distribution end, even though it was very stirred up in most of the reservoirs.
Alum, that sounds familiar.
Alum is something that is sort of a it's a choice that is the lesser of two evils. Basically, it's better than having your water polluted, but it itself has long been used by the DEP to settle sediment in the Kensico Reservoir.
It's aluminum sulfide.
Aluminum sulfate, is the chemical, and what it does is it sort of forms these sticky clumps of sediment. It attracts the dirt and settles it to the bottom. But the alum itself is an environmental pollutant. It can be toxic to fish and other wildlife. And during heavy flooding, the city really doesn't have too many other options to control turbidity. So that's what they do. They actually got a $2.6 million fine from the DEC earlier this year for both the alum issue and also for releasing turbid water into the Ashokan Waste Release Channel. So
so we'll find out if they used more alum this time and got in trouble
again. I think there's no doubt that they used more alum this time, whether or not they're get in trouble for it. So
yeah.
We'll see. But they really don't have too many other options when the reservoirs are so stirred up.
Those were our top news stories in the Catskills region for this week. You are listening to the Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour on WIOX 91.3 FM and WGXC 90.7 FM. So several lawsuits have been filed against New York State towns that have banned hydraulic fracturing, the controversial practice of natural gas drilling that may be allowed in New York State as soon as the beginning of next year. Our guest today, Lissa?
Our guest today is David Mertzig, and he's a municipal lawyer for several towns in the region, including the town of Andes, which is working on a regulation that would include a ban on gas drilling. David, are you there?
I sure am.
Hi, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about this issue and what the town of Andes is currently doing.
Sure. Before I do that, I would like to comment on something that you were talking about earlier, and that is with regard to the DEC hearings.
Yes.
I did want to let your listeners know that the city of Oneonta had offered the city as a site to have the public hearings so that we would have some sort of an opportunity for the citizens to be heard in this area, but we were turned down.
No kidding.
Wow.
I did not know that.
The second thing is that our environmental board, together with OPSECO 2000 and another environmental group, are putting together a meeting time when we will have a court stenographer available so that local citizens can come and put their concerns on the record, which will be put together in stenographic form and then forwarded to DEC during the comment period. So that will be publicized, so I think your viewers in Delaware County will certainly be welcome to come.
That's great news, David. Thank you, and please do keep us posted on that, because
sure
we would love to help publicize it.
Now, let me talk a little bit about the way that the statutes that the localities have been putting together are intended to address hydrofracturing.
Sure.
One of the problems that we have when we're addressing it is that there have been lots of regulations regarding straight gas well drilling in the state. There are approximately 40,000 straight gas wells already existing in the state of New York.
Now, a town can't just sort of pass a law saying, you know, no hydraulic fracturing on Sundays or something like that, right? You can't get so specific as to be regulating the how and where gas drilling occurs.
Yes. Here's what happens. There are certain areas of the law, for example, like state highways. The state highway speed limit is 55 miles an hour. A locality can't say, well, we want it to be 25 on this section of Route 28 because the state says that we have exclusive rights to make determinations as to the speed limits on state law. And because the state says that they have exclusive rights to do that, then localities can't change that.
So gas drilling is a little bit like highway law in that the state says we are the authority on gas drilling and it's not up to the towns to decide how and where it should be done.
Yes, but this is not the first time that the state has taken exclusive possession of particular activities using this language. The first time that it did was approximately 25 years ago. Regulating local, we call them gravel mines. Most people call them gravel banks. New York State DEC said we don't want localities regulating gravel banks anymore because of their impact on highways. And so they put together language that's exactly the same as the language against hydrofracturing. I guess I'll use fracking because that's what everybody...
It's just easier to say.
Exactly, and they know what it means.
Yep.
It's frustrating that it feels like the language that you use determines what side you're on or vice versa, but yes.
Hopefully, at this point, and with my municipalities, I don't advocate for either side. What I do is I prepare statutes for my local boards, and then they make their determinations.
And what do those statutes look like?
Basically, what they are zoning laws. The reason I was telling you a little bit of the history is it's important to know about gravel mines in order to understand where we are with the hydrofracturing, believe it or not.
That's fascinating.
The language that said the DEC had the exclusive right to regulate gravel mines is exactly the same language that they say that they're using to exclusively regulate hydrofracturing. Now, that's all fine and dandy, except that once that statute went into place, there were many lawsuits that arose where local municipalities had passed zoning laws against gravel mines within particular districts. For example, you can't have it within a single residency zone, an R1 zone. And those courts worked their way through the system, and the court said there's a big difference between zoning and regulating. Municipalities have the right under the municipal home rule law to establish zoning laws within their municipalities.
So this seems like a case where you didn't really know exactly what the law said until it kind of worked its way through the courts.
Well, the law said what it said, but you know, sometimes the courts interpret statutes different than what it appears to be on the statute.
So this is saying to towns, in effect, you can use zoning to decide whether or not gas drilling can occur within town borders.
Well, put it this way. There's been 25 years of court decisions all the way up to the Court of Appeals that says when this language is used, which says you can't regulate it, which means we can't tell people they can do it or can't do it. We can't tell them what time they start, what time they stop. We can't tell them whether they're permitted to do it or not permitted to do it. That's solely within the jurisdiction of DEC. However, if we want to regulate it within a zone, then we have that authority. So what's happened is, and the reason that all the municipalities that are opposing it have done it, is that they followed this pattern. They followed the zoning rules, and they have passed a zoning rule against heavy industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You normally can't, when you're putting a zoning law together, object to one particular act and then let another act that might have exactly the same impact be allowed. So the way we've been addressing this is that we've been amending the zoning laws, usually to barring heavy industry, and then defining as part of heavy industry hydrofracturing.
Now this is interesting because I'm wondering are there other similar industries that towns might want to think twice about banning as part of this umbrella ban on gas drilling, or are the towns pretty much united in feeling that heavy industry of any kind is something that they don't want?
Well, most of the municipalities that are banning it are banning it for aesthetic reasons. For example, the law that is going to be considered by the town of Andes, as you know, the town of Andes has a significant second home population, and one of the things that the town is very involved in is tourism and the bucolic nature of the Catskills, which is why a lot of us are here.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they want to preserve and protect that. So as a result, they heavy industry of almost any kind, you know, a steel mill, things of that nature, would have a negative impact. So the town is looking at a zoning change, and what I've been drafting for them is a zoning change that would ban heavy industry. And one of the types of the heavy industry that would be planned would be the fracking.
Now, there are towns in the last month, a couple of towns in New York State that are facing lawsuits because they have passed similar zoning ordinances. One, I believe, from a private corporation, a dairy farm, and another from a gas company.
Yeah, that's the town of Middlefield. There are two actions, one in the town of Middlefield, and the other in the town of Dryden, which is out a little further west.
Tompkins County, right?
Correct. The Middlefield, and there, it's interesting that they're coming from two different directions. One is from a corporation that does farming. I've read the pleadings in both of those cases, and one relates to the fact that they're a lessor. I mean, they have a lease. And they're saying that this unnecessarily interferes with their right to use their own land. And then the one out in Dryden is from a gas corporation that's attacking the zoning law out there. But the language is almost exactly the same in both lawsuits. And that language is that you can't zone it out. It's simply going face on, saying that DEC has exclusive authority to regulate, and that a municipality doesn't.
Do you think that by passing the statute that you're working on, Andes could be opening itself up to a lawsuit like that?
Sure. It's certainly possible, but that happens whenever any municipality does any local law, or especially any zoning law, because, again, very often zoning raises significant emotions. about 3 years ago when wind turbines were a very hot topic. The town passed a wind turbine statute regulating them, essentially banning commercial wind turbines from the town. And again, at that point, we were also threatened by lots of people that this would be a significant economic impact with lawsuits against the town, and that never occurred.
How big of a factor is it, this worry about lawsuits and about the cost of the town defending itself against them in whether towns pass these kinds of laws?
Oh, the cost can be significant. It really can. One of the things it would not be unrealistic to expect that something that went all the way to the Court of Appeals would cost between $50,000 and $100,000 to defend. And for a small town, that's a big chunk of change. Hmm. But the other thing that's happening, for example, in Middlefield, there's a defense fund that's being put together to help them defray the expense. So these cases that have just started are really going to be test cases.
This is an evolving issue, and I'm sure towns across New York State are going to be watching those cases to see how they turn out. David, I thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to the Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour from WIOX 91.3 FM. It's a long weekend. Columbus Day is on Monday, and the hills are alive with festivals. This weekend in Kingston, the O Positive Festival is bringing affordable, actually free, health care to the masses in exchange for art. Lissa, you talked to the organizer of that festival last night, didn't you? I did.
It's the second year that they're running the O Positive Festival, and it's such a cool idea. They are trading health care for art, for musical performance, and it's going to be fantastic. There's going to be a couple of dozen musical acts. There'll be art installations. There will be a samba parade through downtown Kingston.
Samba parade.
And it's going to be good stuff. So you should, if you care about art and or healthcare or both, you should go to Kingston this weekend.
Lark in the Park, the 10-day Catskills hiking and outdoors extravaganza, is continuing this weekend as it has all week. And there are multiple events, more than I can list here. So go to CatskillsLark.org for more information.
This weekend is Stone Fort Days at the Old Stone Fort in Schoharie. The festival will feature music, gunfights, exhibitions of colonial surgery, oh my, and a real 18th century style wedding. More about that in a minute. Bel Air Mountain's annual fall festival will take place this weekend on October 8th and 9th at the Overlook Lodge in Bel Air, and it's free.
Middleburg's Community Party is happening on October 8th. It's happening right after the town's Columbus Day Parade, which starts at 11 a.m. The idea is to give everybody a break from flood cleanup and celebrate how much they've come through together.
There will be a fundraiser for Fleischmann's Flood Relief on Sunday at 1 p.m. in the village parking lot with live music and feasting.
There will also be Platykill's Platypalooza on the whole weekend in Roxbury. And I think that's it for events. Yes, we're running out of time.
These events and more in our This Weekend column, watershedpost.com/thisweekend.
And I want to mention that we and WIOX will be holding a candidates debate for the upcoming election in the town of Middletown for specifically the office of town supervisor. The debate will be live on WIOX on Wednesday, October 26th. You can also go in person to the Middletown town offices on Route 28 from 7 to 8 p.m.
And now it's time for one of our new features here on the weekly radio show, the Watershed Post Weekly News Poem. And
without further ado, I think you should read it, Lissa.
This week's concerns the topic of feral pigs.
Shocking.
Yes. Alas, say New York's politicians, we're too broke to buy ammunition. But Empire State, when pigs go feral, we ignore them at our peril. For pigs are not like sheep or cows. When they get free, they cause a row. Intelligent and plucky louts, they tear up fields with their snouts. Are prone to having lots of babies, susceptible to pseudo-rabies. Armed with tusks more sharp than dull, protruding from iron-plated skulls. And when they're bred with Russian boar, the skirmish swells into a war. Creatures are lovely, wild, and free, but farmer and forester agree. Concerning porkers on the lam, we'd rather they were slabs of ham.
Our last feature before we go is the perpetual optimist. That's me. My glass half full news corner. I just want to say a little more about Stone Fort Days in Schoharie County at the old Stone Fort. There are two Civil War reenactors there who are not only reenacting the Civil War and the Revolutionary War with guns, they're also reenacting it with matrimony. There will be a real, honest-to-God 18th century wedding. Binding.
War and matrimony together at last.
Yes.
Because that's never happened before.
Saturday at the old Stone Fort, you are invited and invited to party afterwards.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Julia, for that ray of sunshine.
Thank you. Rays of sunshine are my specialty. So that wraps up this week's edition of the Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour.
The Watershed Post Half Hour News Hour originates from the studios of WIOX 91.3 FM in Roxbury, New York. Our technical guru is Mike Teitelbaum. Our theme music is by Fred Harris of Aleph & Company in Delhi. The cheesy banter is all ours. Please join us every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here at WIOX 91.3 FM and at 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WatershedPost.com, the source for news and information in the Catskills.